Support for this podcast comes from Eightfold.ai. Eightfold.ai delivers the talent intelligence platform, the most effective way for companies to retain top performers, upskill and reskill the workforce, recruit top talent efficiently, and reach diversity goals. Eightfold.ai's deep learning artificial intelligence platform empowers enterprises to turn talent management into a competitive advantage.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi there, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 399 of the Recruiting Future podcast. Perhaps the only thing that's clear about the future is that it will involve a lot of uncertainty, disruption, and change. As we've heard from all of my recent guests on the show, talent acquisition transformation is now happening in ways we could not have predicted 18 months ago. So, what can talent acquisition leaders do in 2022 to help their teams navigate an ever more volatile business landscape? My guest this week is Ira Wolf. Ira is president of Success Performance Solutions and a well-known author, speaker, and commentator on the changing world of work. In our conversation, Ira shares some valuable perspectives on what employers can do to support their employees to make the behavioural changes needed to be effective in our new never normal. Hi, Ira, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Matt. It's great to be here. Thanks very much.
An absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Could you just introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Yeah, my name's Ira Wolf. Many people know me by a number of different things, ones including being a millennial trapped in a baby boomer body. The body absolutely feels like the baby boomer, but the millennial, maybe it should be even a Gen Z. So I'm thinking like I'm 20, 30 years old and not the baby boomer that I am. But I have a company, Success Performance Solutions. We're in our 26th year. And we work with companies, you know, helping them hire better.
I know that you are a regular commentator on the market. You've written books. You're a keen observer of what is going on and what might be going to happen next. Very, very disruptive 2 years that we've been through, particularly when it comes to talent and recruiting in the bulk of 2021. Tell us about what you're seeing in the market and what you think's really going on.
So, if we go back almost 21 years, and some of the listeners maybe have been around, we were experiencing something similar. And I came up with this title, The Perfect Labor Storm. If anybody remembers, The Perfect Storm was out there, and it was about the convergence of basically three systems that created unprecedented disruptions in the weather. And certainly we're seeing that on a more frequently and more intense basis today. So we're seeing this perfect labor storm, this convergence, and people like to point fingers. Oh, it's those darn millennials and Gen Z. I don't know why people are still talking about millennials because they're 40 years old, but people are. But people tend to deflect and they talk about all these different things like, oh, it's young people's work attitude. It's childcare. Oh, in the U.S., it was unemployment benefits. Reality is there's a lot of disruption going on. So we have, we have a pandemic going on. We have climate change going on. We have economic disruption going on. We have terrorism. There's all these things, but it affects people's mindset. We also have skill gaps. In the U.S., where a large portion of my audience is, we have a lack of childcare. We have problems with healthcare. All these things basically wean off people from the workforce. Some are not capable of working. Some have other responsibilities. And there is just it all converged. And for those who think that the pandemic caused this, it didn't. It just pulled back a curtain on a failing hiring or failing workforce infrastructure that has been building or crumbling, whichever way you want to look at it, for decades. and, you know, 2021 exposed it, and 2022 and 2023, by all indications, is going to, really even reveal more weaknesses in how people hired in and how we trained and educated and developed a workforce for current day, you know, challenges.
I think that's such an interesting perspective, and one that I totally agree with, because it's very much come up time and time again on the podcast, and also in some of the other work that I've been doing, the research that I've been doing. It is really clear that the pandemic has just speeded up trends and things that were happening anyway, and brought them to a head. I suppose that leaves us in an interesting position, because certainly a lot of the conversation around things like the skill shortages or the way that work is changing have been very much positioned in the short-term kind of emergency context. So we just have to get through the next few months. We just need a plan to take us through to the other side. But also the longer that this goes on, it's very clear that we're not going back to some pretend normal that used to exist. And these are all long-term challenges that people have to deal with. What's your perspective in terms of what our new normal might look like, or how this might pan out, and particularly in terms of how employers need to think about this and react to it?
That's a great question. I love talking about it now, because that was the genesis of my book, Recruiting in the Age of Googleization. Which that book, by the way, started after my TED Talk, which was about making change work for you, because I think about change all the time. And that was about VUCA. For those who aren't familiar with the term VUCA, it was a military phrase that's been developed and now adopted by business. And it stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, is the acronym VUCA, V-U-C-A. And I think 2020... And I don't think there was a better description. You could just say 2020, and people would, you know, probably equate it with VUCA. But that also was not a one time event. It wasn't like the pandemic, and we're going to cure the COVID, and the idea of going back to normal doesn't exist. In fact, normal is our own perspective. Normal means we don't want to change. We're addicted to change. Human beings are addicted to change. There was a great Harvard Business Review article just a few months ago, and it talked about how the human brain is not wired for this level of uncertainty. And so the challenge is that we want to go back to the way our way it was, but for some people that normal wasn't very good. If you were making a lot of money, you had a great job, you were happy, you were satisfied, you were engaged, everything was going well, certainly you want to go back to that. But the majority of people weren't in that state. And if you look at even the level of work engagement, you know, we want to go back to normal. Well, normal was where less than 30% of all workers globally were engaged. Is that the normal we want to go back to? That 70% of people are disengaged? So it's sort of crazy to go back to that, but I have these three, what I call the three immutable laws of the future. And the first is that we're now living on an exponential curve, and things are going to change more faster, more frequently. Scope, you know, in the U.S. just the other day, we you know, just over the weekend, we had these massive tornadoes, you know, unprecedented through the Midwest, and it basically in the winter, which never happened, which typically doesn't happen, more severe at night, you know, a lot of death, a lot of destruction, and climate change, you know, think whether that's related to climate change or not. I mean, we're having these events, and the year before we had wildfires, and you know, we got rising sea levels. So there's all this stuff that's continually happen, and it's happening more frequently. So number one, we live on an exponential curve. And the best way I can describe exponential to people is that on the current rate of change, if you took all the events that happened over 12 months worldwide, no matter where you live, all the events that happened in 2020, in 20 years, based on the anticipated rate of change, all those events would happen within 3 months. So for, you know, the dizzying pace and how we felt last year, with the living in, you know, what I call the never normal, the rate of change was going to be going from 12 months to 3 months. But if that continues by 2060, so 40 years from now, so if you're 30 years old when you're 70, the rate of change is going to happen every 11 days. So that's a reality, you know, whether it's going to happen universally or whether there's going to be some things that change faster and some slower. But we're going to be living on this curve. The second part is we're also living in a much more complex world. We're living in an age of complexity. So where things used to be pretty simple, if you did A, B happened, or even complicated, which means it was predictable. Complicated life was, it might have been more confusing, might have taken more work, harder work for us to figure things out. But basically, you know, you can, if something broke, you can replace a part. You just had to know how things worked. Complex means that there is no predictability with complexity. There are patterns and there's trends, but there's also ambiguity because we don't know exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, or even if we know what exactly is going to happen, we don't know when or how or what the intensity is. And we don't know if it'll be universal. So we're living on this exponential curve. And we also are living in an age of complexity. And the third law is that humans suck at change. We're just not very good at it. And I mentioned that earlier. And that's science will tell you, for hopefully for the people who believe in science these days. Science tells us we're just not very good at change, which means that we have to not only change what we do, but we have to change how we do it. And we don't like to do that. We like to have a quick fix. New piece of technology, a new technique, a new tool. Oh, let's get rid of that one person and we'll bring somebody else in. But none of us want to change our behaviors. And that's worrisome. And that's going to continue. So what's ahead in 2022, 23, and every year after that? Faster change, more complexity. And you know, the only thing that we could modify is how we respond and react to change.
And obviously, adaptability and behavior change is something that you focus on a lot. What would your advice be to employers listening in terms of how they can make change happen quicker within their organizations to be better placed to react to all the uncertainty that is, as you say, is only going to continue and accelerate in pace?
So over the last few years, and again, I've got to get credit to the people who do all the research on this. I'm just the voice, I'm the messenger, but I'm passionate about it. And even when I wrote my book, the first half of it, was actually going to be a book about change. The original title was When the Shift, and I'll say this slowly, When the Shift Hits Your Plan. And that was going to continue. And the first half, actually it could have been a standalone book, about 150 pages, was just about change, what the future of work was going to be. And then I decided, you know, let me put it in the context, especially since I was working with a lot of HR and a lot of small businesses, still do. And how, number one is what the world was going to look at. And then two is how recruitment was going to change. So we can talk about that. But ultimately what I realized is that we can come up with all the methodologies and the tools and the technologies and make all the changes that we want. But if we don't change people's behavior and mindset. So I started to work with some organizations and do some research that were looking at how do we help people become better at being comfortable being uncomfortable is probably the easiest way to explain it. And there was one organization actually based in the UK called, their proper name is Adapti, or we have an assessment called the AQAI, which is Adaptability Quotient. And it identified 15 dimensions. Now, we don't have enough time to go into all 15, but they were broken into what they call the ACE model, which was abilities, character, and environment. And I'm going to spend a little bit of time on the abilities because those are the one thing that we as individuals can change and that companies can help people develop just like they would if it was a programming skill or a typing skill or an Excel skill. These are skills that people can learn. Characters are personality, and we're not looking to change personality, but we like everything else, and especially with all the talk about emotional intelligence and self-awareness, we need to just understand who we are, how we are, how do each of us respond to change, either positively or negatively. But ultimately, the third is the E on the ACE model stands for environment. And company culture is incredibly important in helping make this happen. So for everybody that's listening out there, if you're a leader in an organization, a manager, a supervisor, you have to create an environment that is conducive to, that encourages, that embraces change. And how do you do that? Well, you can measure, do the employees feel like they have have their back, which is company support. Do the people that they work with, do the people feel that they have their back? And this isn't anything that's new. This is, you know, engagement, employee satisfaction. We're talking a lot about employee experience now. So does the employee feel that the company has their back? Do they feel that the team has their back? Is there emotional health, which is psychological safety? Do they feel it's safe to talk about their vulnerabilities, to be authentic, to be transparent, to share what their concerns are, to be able to make a mistake, not be perfect every time, because without mistakes, you don't have innovation, nor do you have growth. So it measures company support, team support, emotional health. Do you have the right policies and procedures and things in place? That's work environment. And then finally is, being more attentive to the stress involved with jobs. And there's some jobs that are more stressful than others, but some are off the charts. And there's, we're experiencing the highest rate of burnout and mental illness in many countries, many developed countries. And I know in the UK and the US, we write about it all the time. And it's a big concern. So companies, leaders need to really pay more attention to the environment. And there's ways that you can now measure that just beyond the broad employee engagement, employee experience survey. But on the individual side, they identified five skills. And two of them everybody's probably familiar with. One is grit. One's resilience. So grit is that old keep your head down. Just if you work harder, just focus, just stick with it. Good things will happen. And that's true if we live in a linear world where nothing changes, where the environment never changes. But when things are constantly changing, if you keep your head down, you may end up in the place, in the place you were intended, but it may not be a good place because everybody else shifted direction. Resilience is the ability to bounce back. We're going to need that as well. Regardless, we're still going to need grit and we're going to need resilience. But if we keep bouncing back, we also need to bounce back faster because things are changing faster and we don't have that luxury of months or years sometimes to rebound. The problem with both of those, they just keep us heading in the same direction. And if it's attributed to many people, but if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, and expect a different result, that was the definition of insanity. And I know that's bastardized a bit, but that's true. So they identified three other abilities. One of them is growth mindset. Many people might be familiar with that. It's the ability to continuous learning, having an open mind, being willing to accept mistakes. Not just say, nobody's perfect, but to learn from those mistakes. So it goes beyond just living with, a life of, well, everybody makes mistakes. Nobody can't be perfect. That's true, but you need to learn from them. And the other value that gets overlooked with growth mindset is hope. If we don't have hope, if we don't think that the world can be a better place by even small changes every day, then people aren't going to change. And then it just becomes a dystopian, people are just living in despair. So growth mindset, we need to help people get out of that compared to a fixed mindset. We need to help people unlearn too. And this is the biggest thing that's been, research is showing, is we talk about teaching people new skills, upskilling, reskilling, or even just young kids, adolescents and young adults, better education, more education. But the problem is that a lot of things that have been taught, especially if you're a baby boomer like me, no longer are true. They're no longer effective. And we need to learn and we need to unlearn. So we need to teach people how to unlearn, how to become better at giving things up and not feeling like they're quitting in order to succeed. And the final one is really a challenge because it's mental flexibility. And mental flexibility is the ability to make sense of what's going on. So we have so much misinformation. We have so much ambiguity. There's so much advice out there. And we haven't been very good at it. We wanted to be spoon-fed. We wanted to be told what to do. And so how do you help people? How do you help people respond and react better? So one is grit and resilience. And I don't want to take those off the table because some people need help with those. But to really get to the next level, we need to improve mental flexibility, growth mindset, and unlearning. You can do that on an individual basis, but from an organization, you also have to create an organization that allows that, which was where we started with talking about the environment. So we look at the ACE model. We're not looking to change the C, which is people's character and personality, but hopefully they understand that. I'm spending a lot of time helping companies help their employees, not only from a pre-employment side, but from a development side. How do you help them build their adapt abilities?
A quick message from our sponsor, Wonolo. Hi, everyone. I want to tell you about Wonolo. That's Wonolo. Wonolo stands for Work Now Locally. Wonolo enables businesses to find quality workers for on-demand, seasonal, short-term, and long-term work. Ditch the bulky paperwork and interview process, and use Wonolo to find quality workers fast, and get work done even faster. With flexible workers and no platform fees, you can save on operating costs, meet demand, and maximize earnings with ease. Wonolo is available in over 100 markets, including Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, New York, and Seattle. Get workers who are ready to work and spend less time finding them with Wonolo. Go to www.wonolo.com/pod. That's www.wonolo.com/pod and take the stress out of finding workers. Just to focus on one very specific area, recruiting and talent acquisition, lots of change has been forced upon a lot of the people who are listening to the podcast in the last 12 months because of circumstances. How do you think talent acquisition needs to adapt for the long term? What do you think recruiting looks like moving forward?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that because it's a great tie and it brings it home. We talk about what needs to change. And usually if you say, well, what do you need to do differently? Or what are you doing differently in 2022? And most of my clients or most of the people I talk to when I speak tend to talk about technology. Well, we're looking at a different ATS or we're adding more people or we're doing this. But nobody talks about the change in behavior. Everybody looks at the doing something and expect that something to make a difference. We're experiencing globally, but in the U.S., we're having record numbers of people quit their jobs and change jobs. We can talk about bonuses. We can talk about paying people more. We can talk about things that we do. But ultimately, in order to keep people in place, we need to change, management needs to change their behavior and mindset. We talk about diversity and inclusion. To create creating a better employment brand. And maybe one way to do that is having more diversity and inclusion. Maybe it's having equity. Whatever we do is requiring us to not just do things, buy technology, change a strategy, buy a company, whatever it is in order to integrate those, in order to make those things happen, everybody has to change their mindset and their attitude and their behaviors. Otherwise, it's like, well, if we have technology and we keep doing the things that way we do, yeah, you can do it faster and maybe you can do it better. But the reality is that if you have bad practices or ineffective practices in place and you use more technology, you just fail faster. And again, and the hardest thing it is It drives me crazy. It's the most frustrating part of everything that I do, that people just think that, well, we're investing in this new technology, and I'm a geek. I mean, I love technology. I use it, but the technology requires people to change their behaviors in order to use it effectively, so that they're using it, they're automating what can be automated, so they can spend more time being a better human being, having better interactions, having more interactions, and that's, I just don't see that being done, and that's the part that terrifies me about where companies are headed. There are some companies that are doing it right, but the majority are just looking for, you know, they want an aspirin and you know, and a Band-Aid, and hopefully it goes away tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is still a massive issue when it comes to particularly recruiting technology, that people are looking for that silver bullet to solve their problems and not necessarily thinking about everything around it. I mean, it is, from what I see, it is getting better, but it is still a massive, massive issue.
Yeah, I work with, and you know, again, when you're working with large organizations, enterprise organizations, you know, tens of thousands of people, or that doesn't even have to be that, it could be just thousands of people, then they tend, you know, that group, which is a lot of the people who get surveyed, seem to be making the changes. I work with I do work with a few large companies, but I also work primarily, mostly, with small, medium-sized businesses, and they're really struggling. They're struggling day-to-day. They're struggling to make this over. And you would think, you know, because smaller companies are a little bit more nimble, they don't have to turn around the battleship on a dime. They can do it pretty quickly, but sometimes they don't have the resources or the manpower to do it. But, you know, every organization is going to have to figure this out and do it pretty quickly, because the exponential is not going away. I mean, it never has in the history of mankind, because that's also progress. And that just brings up a point, Matt, that I know people, there's probably a few people out there that go, technology is the problem, you know, millennials the problem, Gen Z is the problem. But when they look at 2020, it's that we can't wait to get back to, you started out this way, we can't wait to get back to normal. Let's get back to the office. But if we roll the clock back, let's say 10 years, which isn't that long. So we go back to 2010, 2011. And imagine the pandemic occurring then, what the world would have been like. And there are so many people talking about Zoom fatigue and working remote. Well, that was an asset. That saved probably millions of lives and hospitalizations. It could have been so much work that worse. If we 10 years ago had this pandemic, then the choices would have been not to let in the, and again, I know the US numbers base, but I know UK and, you know, most developed countries were very similar, is that in the US, 30 million people lost their job on a temporary basis. But there were still 110 million people working every day because they could work remote. Without technology, we wouldn't have been able to do that. And so people would have either just been out of work or would have had to show up in their workplace and be exposed. And that would have been, I mean, that would have been much more tragic than it already is. We already have, even doing it somewhat okay, we had, you know, more than 800,000 people. It's probably going to be well over a million before, and I won't say it's all over, but before we get it under control. So that's the one, you know, so that's huge. We also wouldn't have had a vaccine, you know, and I know, again, I'm just saying, as much as we complain about technology saved us, because traditionally it took, you know, almost 10 years to develop a vaccination for something. And we, in less than a year, mRNA, which is how Pfizer and Moderna and variations of some of the other ones that were developed, was only done through technology, the use of technology. So, you know, technology helps when it's used properly, but it requires a different mindset. And I don't get it when people are just bashing all the technology, and I can't wait to go back to all this in person. And we do need in person. We're human beings. We need personal contact. But we need to, we need to learn how to rely on technology when we need it, because there's a whole lot of benefits that come from that. And if we can free up some of our time through technology and live healthier lives, and actually one is live, because there are vaccines, but live longer, higher quality lives, then, we have more time to interact with other people and do that well.
That leads me on nicely to my final question. I'm not going to ask you to predict what's going to happen next year, because that would seem slightly crazy in the context of what we've been talking about. But what do you hope to see happen in 2022? If we were talking again in a year's time, how would you have liked the year to have panned out?
Yeah, I love that question, because my answer, I'll give you the short answer to the first part is what do I think is going to happen? And it's a little bit of a pun on my book, When the Shift Hits Your Plan. And it's about, I think it's going to be a shift show. I got to say that slowly. We're just going to see continued shift, and people are going to be struggling. And we're talking with an economist on my podcast this week. And every indication is that it's going to be a much more difficult struggle to keep people, to find people, to grow, to innovate. But if you do things right, if you make the changes and you start working on it, the bar is so low in kind of talent acquisition and talent retention that you don't have to be perfect. But if you're better than you were and you're doing the right things and you're headed in the right direction and you're recognizing that it is going to be much more challenging and it's not going to pass, then those companies, I think, are going to have great years. I think they're going to start to, it's never going to be easy to find all the people you want and keep everybody that you want. But it's going to get better. And so it's a long way around. The other part of the question is, what do I think is going to happen? What would I like to see happen? And what I'd like to see happen is that more companies recognize that the world's going to be different. And most importantly, they help the workers, they help their employees respond and react. Because that's going to be invaluable. If you learn how to respond and react and change and have more grit, more resilience, have a more open mindset, willingness to unlearn, those are life skills. And that not only helps you have better employees and be able to attract and retain people, but they're going to have more loyalty and they're going to feel better about themselves. I mean, if we don't have people are, I mean, the amount of skepticism, pessimism, despair that people are feeling is really tragic. And if you can give people a little ray of hope, that's the biggest pay, that's the best compensation and benefit you can possibly give. So companies have to figure out how to become better at that. So at the end of next year, that's my wish, that companies recognize that people are, that their workers are human beings and they need help. And one way to help them is help them become more comfortable being uncomfortable.
Ira, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's a pleasure. And Happy New Year.
My thanks to Ira Wolf. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow the show on Instagram. You can find us by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search all the past episodes at recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to the mailing list to get the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.